At Farm to Table, we know how confusing healthcare is. We're here to simplify the healing process. We believe that healthcare should be simple. It should help people feel better. That's why we started the Table Talk podcast, to gather around the table with you, no matter where you are. We want to come and learn together and discuss a new healthcare approach that addresses the root cause of your symptoms. The journey for each person is unique, but together we can thrive. All right. Welcome to our Table Talk session. And we're actually going to be also sharing this on our Table Talk podcast, but we have not yet talked about fertility on the podcast. And so within our team of pharmacists with Farm to Table, we've been having a lot of questions from patients about fertility. We see a lot of women that are in the 25 to 45 range. Oftentimes fertility is something that they're coming either to us as asking questions, or that's part of why they're wanting to get healthy and prepare their bodies. And so we thought it'd be a really good idea tonight to talk about fertility. And two of our team members, we have Dr. Jessica Orlowski here, and she is out in Pennsylvania, Mountaintop, Pennsylvania. And then on the other coast, we have Dr. Christine Sanford, or Dr. Christine Reynolds. If you're a patient of hers, she might still be under that name, but she is on the West Coast in California. And both of them are passionate about this topic, and they're going to lead us off in discussion about fertility. But please, if you have questions, like I said, put them in the chat box and we will try to address them. Some of our other team may be popping in as well and might jump in and answer questions too. So we can go ahead and get started. Jessica, do you want to lead us off and then maybe introduce yourself as part of that?
Sure.
Awesome.
Yes, I am part of the Farm to Table team. In addition to being part of the team, I also am owner of a pharmacy in Mountaintop where I live. So I try to incorporate functional medicine there, and I see patients on the side in all aspects of functional medicine, but I am, like Melody said, very passionate about fertility. So tonight with fertility, you're going to see a lot of themes, common themes pop up. So basically, fertility means your body is healthy. Your body is in a good place. And if you're having trouble trying to conceive or can't figure out why you're having a hard time getting pregnant, your body is basically protecting itself. So we're going to talk about what you could do to optimize your fertility at any time. And then we're also going to talk about maybe some health issues that you need to dig down to the root cause to figure out infertility.
Right. Yes. So before we jump in, Christine, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, my name is Christine Sanford. I am part of the Farm to Table team. I'm a pharmacist out in the Bay Area. And my clinical expertise really is like prenatal care, like Melody was saying, preconception. I have a strong interest in, as well as like autoimmunity and GI health. So yeah, excited to join in on this conversation tonight.
Awesome. All right. So let's get started with the preconception planning. So if we are talking to some of our patients and listeners out there, or the people that are listening tonight, what do we do if we are 2 years out from being pregnant or wanting to become pregnant?
If you're 2 years out and you're thinking about it, great. Because a lot of times we don't think of what we need to do before we get pregnant. We just think, oh, I'm going to try to get pregnant and see what happens. But I'm sure so many of us have dealt with issues, or you know somebody personally that has dealt with fertility issues. And so going through some preconception planning kind of gives you a little bit of a peace of mind, knowing that you're trying to take the right steps to optimize that plan of getting pregnant.
Right. Right. So what would be those first steps then to optimize?
Really, it's kind of like the pillars of health, I think. So you want to definitely give yourself a minimum of 3 months, like 3 months out, because the egg that you get pregnant with matures 90 days before you ovulate it. So 90 to 120 days. So at least 3 months before you really want to get pregnant, you could start focusing on, say, like a whole foods diet, clean, avoid processed foods, refined sugars. Eating the rainbow provides healthy antioxidants for egg health, making sure you work on quality sleep, exercise, move your body. Those would be some of the big things. What do you talk about, Christine, with your patients?
Yeah, definitely. Those are the big pillars of health. What we always talk about in functional medicine, which is, you know, stress reduction, sleep, optimizing nutrition, the clean whole foods approach, addressing any food allergies, and like also digging deeper. So when I think about like what could potentially cause infertility and or maybe cause less than ideal side effects with like a fetus or an embryo, you know, I think about potentially heavy metal toxicities. So making sure you see a normal practitioner probably won't test for heavy metal toxicities, but it is something that we know that can really inhibit the conversion of certain enzymes and within the mitochondria that are needed for producing optimal sex hormones. So that is like downward stream can then impact your ability to ovulate and become pregnant. So looking at that, I also look at full thyroid function. All your hormones are connected. So it's not just like your sex hormones are in one bucket. You have your adrenal hormones and you have your thyroid hormones and you have your sex hormones, and they all talk to each other and they all work synergistically with one another. So we're making sure that you're optimizing those functionalities really do help increase your success rate with fertility. Also a big one that I don't think is addressed a lot is looking at like chronic infections, specifically like gastrointestinal low-grade infections, because when we have these types of infections, it really causes an increase in some of our pro-inflammatory cytokines, which are like these things in our body that cause inflammation and basically tells our body, hey, hold on, you're not at the ideal health to ovulate. And so these toxins that are released or inflammatory cytokines that are released inhibit the production of certain hormones that we need to ovulate. So addressing those from a functional standpoint is also key.
Yeah. And you're also passing the microbiome that you have in your gut on to baby, because there's a lot of translocation, which means like gut bacteria leave and they go into the vaginal microbiome. So if you can address those things, balance the yeast and balance the microbes beforehand, it's going to give baby a better setup too.
Definitely. And I know you touched on a little bit, but like cleaning up your diet. So like toxin exposure, doing a detox, but before you even think about becoming pregnant, doing a detox, because you shouldn't be doing that while I would say even before like the 3 month mark, just to like, that egg is the one you're going to use. So before, because you're going to mobilize those toxins. And so you want to make sure that you're definitely not pregnant when that happens, but helping to get rid of heavy metal toxicities or chemicals. I think there was actually a new study, I didn't read it all, but they're actually finding plastics in the umbilical cord of babies that are born. And we know that there's a whole slew of toxins that are over like 280 toxins, I think, in this last study in umbilical cord blood, but now it's actually specific like microplastics. So it's just so imperative that we're adequately detoxifying and supporting our organs of elimination. And then also just not exposing ourselves to toxins as much as possible every day.
Yeah. And one of the simple things I think is getting good bowel movements through the day. I mean, I know sometimes it's not so simple depending on the experience, but yeah, that piece, like we have to be eliminate those toxins. Otherwise everything's just going to be recirculating and going through the liver again and burdening our liver. So we have to make sure things are moving.
I was going to say too, and we talk about doing all of this preconception planning to optimize your fertility, but you're also kind of like filling your tank to make sure that you are the healthiest you can be when you get pregnant. So you're going to be making sure that you're feeling your best. So it helps lower side effects from pregnancy, helps you recover better once you do have the baby, and also removing the toxins and improving the egg quality actually sets your child up not only to have less, say, risk of complications at birth, but there are studies that show that children have better mood resilience and lower chronic diseases when they were exposed to like less toxins and had more nutrients provided to them in utero.
Yes. And there's also studies like about stress response too. And like kids, you know, that are under a lot of stress in utero also have like less resiliency and things like that later on. So managing the stress starts with beforehand for sure, but also throughout the pregnancy too. So we talk about eating the rainbow. We do in general recommend a prenatal vitamin for women that are planning to become pregnant, especially during that 3 months before, but if not, maybe even further out before, and optimizing your nutrient status. So we know that there's limitations to our diet here in the US, but getting the full amount of nutrients that you need from your diet is hard. We want as much of it to come from your nutrients because there's so many phytonutrients and compound, like if you think about an apple, like you're not just getting vitamin C or even quercetin by itself. It's like the effects of having the vitamin C with the quercetin, with the polyphenols that are in the red peel that are all doing the job that the apple's doing. So that's why it's so important to do as much from diet as possible, because single nutrient studies and multivitamin studies have been limited, but it sort of helps us like fill the gaps when we need those gaps filled and we're preparing for pregnancy. I know there's a lot of women that, and including myself, I actually did not take a prenatal during my first pregnancy. And I regret that because I was definitely nutrient depleted afterwards, even though I took a vegetable and fruit supplement that I will not name the name of, and folate, because I knew folate was super important, but this was before my functional medicine journey. And then afterwards I was super depleted in B vitamins. And part of that is just like the whole stress of your body, how much is going to your baby and how much in breastfeeding happens. And so I think a lot of the women that I've worked with after post-pregnancy, they maybe had a similar experience where, you know, someone in the health food area was like, hey, you don't need this. You can get this from diet, which, you know, in many cases is true. Women didn't take prenatals in the early days, but biblical times, but they also weren't under the stress that we're under. They weren't eating canned food and processed food and fast food and all of these things. And so we're obviously want to put the focus on the nutrition, especially from a neural tube defect standpoint. We definitely want to make sure that you get plenty of folic acid, at least 400 micrograms, if not 800 or 1,000 a day. And I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit about, from that perspective, like the methylated folate versus non-methylated folates and folic acid. Any thoughts on that that we want? I don't know if this is a good place to talk about that since we're talking about supplements. Yeah.
I say, without doing a genetic test to see if any, if you had the MTHFR mutation or variation, which means you don't process folic acid into the form your body needs, I say to just take a methyl folate, to take like a methylated folic acid form, which unfortunately you cannot find in most prenatal vitamins, like if you just walk down the aisle in Target or a pharmacy. So you have to really read your labels. Even methylated B vitamins are the best absorbed because, you know, they say every woman of childbearing age should be taking a prenatal. The truth is most of us probably aren't. I know I was not very consistent with it in my pregnancies, but especially too, if everybody should be taking one, but the ones that are readily available don't have an absorbable form of folic acid, that is a shame. It upsets me for me to sell those in my pharmacy.
Right. Yeah. And I think too, like the conversion is the piece that is the most important. And it's interesting because I have multiple MTHFR mutations, and most of us have at some level. And there are certain ones that are maybe more important in this conversation than others, as far as that we know that our reduction in conversion of that folate is 30 or 60% less, depending on if you have two of those copies of the gene or one copy of the gene. But also, like, some people feel terrible taking methylated Bs because, and this is my case, it makes me really anxious, almost like I've got like a bunch of coffee and jittery and those kinds of things. So I say that just because I think a lot of functional medicine practitioners are like, hey, take methylated everything. And there, it can be a point of over-methylation, but there's also like more downstream enzymes that are playing a role, like COMT and other things that could be blocking the ability for that to be gotten rid of in a way in the body. And so making sure you feel well taking these is important too. So if for some reason someone tells you like grab this methylated one, or you try it and you feel more anxious or you feel not yourself taking it, like that's a discussion that you should have with your provider. And maybe genetic testing is, would be helpful to determine what the best source of B vitamins, or even looking at your actual nutrient status and looking at your levels of B vitamins and things like that might be helpful. But yes, there are some good brands that are available over the counter coming out with methylated Bs. Even like kids' Smarty Pants have them in it, and things that people can grab in the pharmacy or at Target and those things. There's a couple, I think, even more like direct to consumer, like online marketing ones that are easy, but we have a lot of great brands and we can share those with you after this call as well. But moving on, is there anything you wanted to say, Christine, about that conversation?
No. No, I think that was a good broad overview. I think it can be get down to some specifics, but generally a methylated form is better for better absorption. But however, there are a lot of people have genetic polymorphisms that could affect the way you break it down. It could make you feel anxious or like irritable. And so just something to be aware of and talk to a practitioner about.
For sure. Okay. So we've talked about the 3 months before the minimum. So let's talk a little bit about the labs. We did talk about thyroid panel and vitamin D. I don't know if we talked too much about vitamin D. So vitamin D is actually a hormone that's also called a vitamin, but it plays a ton of roles in the body. And we know that low vitamin D levels can be correlated with things like PCOS and insulin resistance. And so that's part of the vitamin D's role in the body. So anything else you guys want to say on vitamin D as far as connection to fertility?
No, I just think what's been studied is if you want an ideal range, you know, like at least greater than 50, I would say some practitioners like to go up to 90. I think the evidence is still within the 60 and 70 range, but making sure you're just hitting at least like the 50 mark is going to be a little bit different between the conventional range, which is, you know, as long as you're greater than 20, you're good. So I would definitely aim for a higher reference range there. And then that, again, it's not going to be one dose is the magic dose for everyone. It's everyone responds to vitamin D differently. So I might need 2000 IUs and someone else might need 5000. But again, it's just all going to be dependent on your blood levels.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, there's definitely interesting conversations about D. We could go into the levels of D itself and how, what it should be. I think we're still trying to figure that out exactly. We know it should be more than the standard, but too much is of a good thing can also be a problem with calcium and things like that. So mineral and nutrient panels, we mentioned a CBC and full iron panel that includes ferritin. So this is really important because a lot of women can become depleted in iron during their pregnancies, especially like later on in second, third trimester. So definitely making sure we have plenty of those red blood cells that are taking oxygen to our bodies because your blood volume increases during pregnancy. So not only are you, you know, you start out with this blood volume, but if you're already like trending toward anemic or low iron before you start increasing your blood volume, you're going to have problems when you start making more blood to be able to oxygenate your body and the babies.
And I think you pointed out, I just wanted to explain the ferritin piece. But the ferritin piece is important because that's your body's like iron storage capacity. So it's really going to be a reflective of kind of like how much iron you have in the bank, if you will. So that's why it's important to look at that marker versus just only like a serum iron level.
Yeah. Serum iron just tells what's happening right now. Yeah, go ahead.
And some studies are even guessing that about 40% of women are not totally anemic, but on their way to iron deficiency or pretty close when they get pregnant. So even though you might have no idea or you feel good or you don't feel like you're anemic, your stores and your levels are just not where they should be to get pregnant.
Yeah. And this comes back to like people with heavy cycles and things like that. If you're bleeding a lot and like not replenishing that through the month, that can be part of the challenge. Circling back to vitamin D real quick, there are also some data that women who are pregnant with low vitamin D levels have more risk of kids with like asthma and like atopic disease and allergies. So that's why we always want to optimize vitamin D in pregnancy too, along with omegas and things like that from an inflammatory standpoint. Okay, cool. And we can get into the glucose and insulin conversation. I don't know, we talked about PCOS a little bit later, but the optimizing glucose is really important to helping with ovulation. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about that now, the connection between PCOS and insulin, or wait till we get into like the causes.
Maybe with the causes, because it would be repetitive.
Perfect. So other things, inflammation markers, and then I think we had anti-Müllerian hormone, which is also a marker of like how many eggs you have. And so this can be a marker that's used to make sure you have enough for fertility treatments. And then some women that have a high AMH actually more likely to have PCOS. So they have more of those follicles than the average person. So it can be something that a doctor may test to determine one or the other things, but it's definitely used often in the fertility practices.
I was just going to say, I'm not a fan of AMH because I have seen it affect so many women mentally. Like they go and they're trying to do the right thing and they get their labs done and they're thinking, oh, I'm 34, I'm 35 or older. I'm going to make sure that I can get pregnant, kind of. They think that these labs are going to give them an answer, and then they have this low AMH and they panic, or they think there's nothing they can do. But I've seen women get pregnant on like a 0.5 or a 1 AMH. But I've also seen doctors, for example, my one friend, she's 35. She got a bunch of labs done. Her AMH was, I think it was below 1. And she's like, okay, well, I'm getting married in a year, and I just want to know what could happen when I try to get pregnant after my wedding. And the doctor told her he wants her to try to get pregnant before her wedding because her AMH was so low.
Oh my goodness.
See, yeah. And it really, just to clarify, AMH is not a predictor of fertility. It's not. It's a predictor of your ovarian reserve.
And so it fluctuates.
It fluctuates. And so it's not telling you, because it's low, that means you have a lower chance of becoming pregnant. It just means where you are at that point in time is a marker of how much ovarian follicles, really, that you have left. But you only need one, and those could be amazing follicles, right? And typically an AMH of 1 is reflective of 10, well, depending on your age range, but like of at least 10 antral follicles. So just to clarify that, because I do think the AMH does get a bad rap, and it really is only a predictor of reserve, not actual your probability of becoming pregnant.
Right. Yeah, the doctor telling you to get pregnant before your wedding is a whole nother ethical conversation. So we talked about the detox and fertility foods, cycle tracking we haven't talked about. Do you, either of you have a preference for methods for that? Or
I like any app that's very helpful. I mean, there's so many different apps. MyFlow is a really good one, or Premom, but I don't have like one that I'm specifically tied to.
Yeah. And the Apple has like a cycle tracking thing on the iPhone now too. And the Aura Ring also, if you're using an Aura Ring to track your sleep, has.
But I definitely think especially women who like maybe have been on birth control for a number of years and they're not in tune with their cycles, like picking up on like your different phases of your cycle and, you know, when you're fertile, when you're in that ovulatory window, based on like the mucus production and different just symptoms and how you feel, I think is key. And when you're on oral contraceptives or any type of hormonal birth control, that's all suppressed. So you don't get to have that it feels like a one-on-one with yourself almost to feel like how your hormones feel in the different phases of your cycle. So I would say starting that out early, it is key just to help you predict your body and when you feel like you're fertile, and then that helps you confirm.
Yeah. And knowing that it's not like an every 28 day phenomenon for every woman, like most people are, that's an average of all of these different extremes. So some people might be closer to 35 days and some people might be 27 days. And so that just counting to like the middle and assuming that's when you ovulate just isn't going to work. So that's where we have to be watching those cervical fluid changes and the basal body temperature. The Aura Ring, the newest version of the Aura Ring, I always talk about the Aura Ring, but it has a better temperature monitor in it. So it can actually, you know, you wear it while you sleep, or you can wear it all day long and watch your temperatures throughout the month on there without having to like sit there and do a temperature when you wake up in the morning. And so, and it will sort of alert you when those temperature changes. So if you're looking for a tool that is a way to a little bit of biohacking and look at your heart rate variability and your stress along with that and your sleep stages, that could be a good tool. And then anything else you guys want to say about tracking?
Yeah. Cycle tracking is nice, is good too, because when you are trying to conceive, sometimes if the time frame before ovulation might be too long, or after you ovulate and you get your period is shorter than normal, those are all things that can really help figure out, without testing, just kind of guessing hormone levels might be at play as to, say, you're ovulating, but the egg's not implanting, or maybe you're not ovulating because your estrogen is too high. I know next table talk will be a discussion about hormone testing. Mm-hmm. Knowing how many days you spend in each phase is important too.
Yeah. Yeah. And we also, I mean, we will talk more about testing next time, but the Dutch test is one test that we can use that can, we can map cycles just using urine measurements throughout like a whole cycle so that we don't have to send you to the lab like all through the month to figure out what's going on. And that can help us figure out, you know, with a couple of patients, I figured out, wow, you're ovulating way sooner than they thought they were, at least in that particular cycle. The challenge being that it's one cycle and things can differ throughout different cycles. But sometimes that can help you nail down a period of time or a time where maybe someone's cycle length was shortened or different things like that. Okay. So we talked about the quality prenatals as far as the methylated Bs, but choline is another thing to make sure is in your prenatal. You guys want to mention anything about choline?
Yeah. Choline is also, it's so hard to get in your diet. Really, like the two powerhouses are going to be eggs, and you want to make sure you're getting them organic if possible and pasture raised if possible. That's going to significantly increase the choline content in the yolks. And then also liver. And I know that's not like a favorite in anyone's household, but right. So that's my liver.
I can't even believe my daughter ate them. I made liver meatballs sometimes. I did like ground beef mixed with like the beef liver and stuff. But man, oh man, do those smell disgusting. And I don't even know if she ate them.
That's like the only way I can get myself and my husband to eat. I just go to my butcher and I tell him to do like, you know, 70% ground beef with like the fat and then like 10% liver. And that's like the only way I can really eat. But it tricks both of us because you can't tell when it's like really that ground up. But yeah. But if you are going to be
liver is a little bit easier to get down. The chicken liver doesn't have as strong of a smell.
Yeah. It's important that you get them. The livers are organic because the liver is our detoxification organ. And so we just really want to make sure that the liver that we're then consuming was raised and eating, you know, all organic and no, we're not putting extra toxins into our body.
Sure. Yeah. Yes. Good. So yeah. So choline is hard to get. Egg yolks and liver are ways that you can get those in your diet. You might have to be careful in pregnancy though, consuming too much liver because of vitamin A content too. So I don't know if Christine, you want to say anything else about that? Like what would the limit be?
Yeah, I believe it's going to be less than 3 ounces 2 times a week. But again, I'm not 100% positive on that. So I would double check with your healthcare provider.
Right. Perfect. All right. And so we talked about sleep, quality sleep. We talked about the Oura Ring as a way to track. There's something called the Whoop Band. There's other apps, but a lot of them are really getting really more sophisticated and being able to tell us like how much time we're spending in deep sleep and how much of our heart rate is decreasing, or the variability piece is really important to know that we have this fluctuation in our heart rate means that we're less stressed and are less perceived stress. And then exercise. So exercise and movement are going to be really important in preparing your body, not only to help improve ovulation, but also to like make sure you have the strength for pregnancy. Cause it is like a serious, like a Olympic event, I feel like. And Jess had twins, so she might be able to speak more to that, but it takes a lot of your muscle strength. And afterwards you have to work about rebuilding the muscle strength and your pelvic floor and your abdomen. So as much as you can be fit beforehand is going to be helpful in the recovery process.
Yeah, I was in great shape for my first pregnancy with my daughter. And then she was 2 years apart from the twins. And I would exercise here and there, but I never got back into like the best shape ever, you know, with a baby and busy. So I could definitely tell almost right away. Like as soon as I got pregnant, it's like +2 is your second pregnancy, you get bigger quicker. But granted, they were small twins, but it's still twins. So like I did have some like diastasis recti, like splitting of my ab muscles, just kind of like just loss of muscle mass because I wasn't able to exercise. They were worried like with where my placenta was placed with the boys for the beginning. So I kind of got really nervous and I didn't exercise. And I wish I did. I could have done just light things and small things. And I ended up getting, I can't even remember what it's called, but like there's a nerve that starts in your abdomen and with the pressure and the fluid, it gets pinched. And then my arm would fall asleep at night and get shooting pains. And I had
in your arm.
Yeah. And I had neuropathy in my feet for like the last trimester. And also for like 2-3 months after I had the boys. And I think it was just kind of like, I wasn't moving. I wasn't pushing the fluid around. Like I felt amazing when I was pregnant with my daughter, but I kind of didn't take as good care of myself with the boys, and I could tell.
Okay. Yeah, that's great advice. So definitely stay active as much as you can. Work with someone that specializes in training women who are pregnant. I worked with a personal trainer when I was pregnant with my son, and that made a huge difference in my recovery with him versus my daughter too. And then we talk about stress management a lot, so I'm going to skip over that full discussion just because we've had that before, but we'll continue to talk about that just so we can get into some of the causes of infertility. So let's start with the male factor infertility.
I just want to start with this because I feel like it usually gets kind of just mentioned at the end, like, oh yeah, and by the way, you should have your partner's semen checked, or, oh yeah, and by the way, or like this, the female goes through all this testing, all this preparation. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, well, we never did a semen analysis or anything like that. And not that the man is always like to blame, but 50% of infertility cases could have something to do with male factor infertility, which is basically, say, like a low sperm count, or the shape size of the sperm isn't as ideal as we would want it.
Yes. So there are ways that you can test at home, semen analysis kits, but it's pretty easy test for your provider, your husband or partner's provider to order too. And then, so if someone doesn't have optimal sperm, what is the go-to sort of prescription for that, in quotes?
I would say it's first of all, doing a deep dive into why. So the root cause of that. And a lot of times it has to do with like with their diet and with their exposures, heavy alcohol use and heavy marijuana, specifically like THC use, can reduce overall semen like morphology and motility as well as catch. So definitely kind of reducing that, eliminating alcohol and eliminating THC use completely, would be step one. Also, in order to make semen, we need certain enzymes to be working. We need our mitochondria to be working. So making sure we're addressing lifestyle and diet and removing, like it's mentioned previously, you know, toxin exposure, making sure we're eating clean, reducing our pesticide and herbicide exposures, and also heavy metal toxicities as well. And stress, I think stress is also a huge piece. And there are some supplements, and I don't know if I want to get into it now, that are also beneficial as well.
Yeah, selenium is one of those and is found in a lot of those male fertility products. But
zinc too.
Yeah, optimizing the antioxidants and those micronutrients. And so we can do a micronutrient test and run those just like we can on women and figure out, is there something that they're not getting? Seemingly inflammation is part of this process too. And I've seen and heard some cases of patients that have post-COVID, their semen morphology is decreased. And so that's an interesting mechanism, and it's post-COVID infection. So full-blown infection. I don't know if there's any data on the vaccine side or not, but as far as the infection side, that they've been seeing, you know, some changes in morphology for patients right afterwards, which makes sense. COVID causes inflammation. I've seen diabetes patients have all of a sudden crazy blood sugars because of the inflammation afterwards. And so just something to think about. I think for most people, it resolved after a few months as they got their inflammation under control. But if you're testing now and it was recent to an infection, and not even just a COVID infection, it could be other types of infections that your body is using up its mineral and nutrient stores to address an infection, it might affect the sperm count too. So, or a stressful experience that happened a few months ago and your body is trying to deal with that. So those are important things to look at. And then the ovulatory dysfunction. So anything else you guys want to say about men's health or male fertility?
A lot of the things that Christine mentioned kind of align too with what a woman would be doing preconception planning. So it's kind of, you know, to get your partner on board with exercise, the whole foods diet, reducing toxins, things like that. So they kind of align.
Yeah. I think one of the things I've thought about before too is like supplements that he's taking, like, is there things that would have a negative consequence on this? So like I have my husband on some cholesterol supplements for his high cholesterol, and I'm like trying to deep dive, does berberine cause issues with this, or does whatever supplement it is? But we don't have a lot of data there. So that's where you're going to have to lean towards your functional medicine providers. And if there are a bunch of supplements you're taking, or even drugs that someone's taking, there may need to be some evaluation into that and how those could potentially affecting the sperm morphology too. All right. So let's move on to ovulatory dysfunction. Basically, the term is used when providers say you're not ovulating. And so you're not having that release of the egg that doesn't get fertilized and to go through the process. So a lot of times women don't have menstrual cycles, but they could have a menstrual cycle, but no egg was released. So there's a lot of different causes for this, some being PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. And that disorder is very much, it's insulin resistance. Sometimes there's PCOS that really, there's not a lot of insulin resistance. We test their insulin levels. We test their testosterone, a lot of times testosterone. And so we have sort of the spectrum of any condition where some people have this full blown, every marker looks exactly like what it textbook relationship. But then sometimes we have a mix of things, or even just the only sign we see is the ovaries with the cyst. You know, it can be different disorders, but a lot of times that can lead to anovulation or not having an ovulatory cycle. So there are certain things from a functional medicine perspective that we can do to address insulin resistance. A lot of them we've already talked about with nutrition and food and movement and stress reduction, but sometimes we can use targeted supplements. Sometimes we can use drugs that help to improve insulin resistance in the fertility process. So there are studies on metformin, there's studies on pioglitazone, there's studies even with GLP-1 agonists, which are all diabetes drugs that can help with that if someone's provider insulin resistance is playing a role there. Certainly in our camp, we start with the diet and lifestyle, and we start with even things like inositol, which is like a B vitamin in the B vitamin family, can help sensitize the cells better to insulin. And there's some studies with women in PCOS using that even throughout their pregnancy to prevent gestational diabetes. So there's some cool things there. But other things you guys want to talk about? Other?
Yeah, definitely. That's true with the hormone piece with PCOS. If you're seeing higher like androgens, which again can be secondary to insulin resistance, or like HPA axis dysfunction, or adrenals also produce half of our testosterone or our androgens, incorporating agents that help with like the conversion or like the reduction of testosterone is key. So things like spearmint tea helps to reduce testosterone production, licorice root. Although licorice root, do not use that without talking to a professional, because it has other side effects like increasing blood pressure. So you want to avoid that. GC, which is the active component in green tea, also helps to reduce DHT. And like also sex hormone binding globulin. So things that will help to increase that and help to reduce the free testosterone that's playing a role is beneficial. So things like flaxseed, chia seed. Yeah, those things off the top of my head.
Yeah. Increasing the fiber to help.
Increasing the fiber. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then stress. So we skipped over a discussion of stress at the beginning, but definitely over-exercising, too much cardio can, especially if when this leads to less body fat, can contribute to losing the menstrual cycles. You've probably heard about athletes or gymnasts and things like that are losing their menstrual cycle because of it. And that is direct reflection of not having, you know, good hormone production. And when our body goes, and we've talked about this before, when we go into fight or flight mode, we are running from a bear constantly, whether we're physically doing that in exercise or whether we're mentally doing that because of other psychological stressors, then our body's not thinking about making hormones. Just like Jess said at the beginning, you know, we're sort of in this body protecting itself phase when we're in that fight or flight mode. Definitely stress can play a huge role in not having actual cycles or having anovulatory cycles, or someone might appear to be cycling, but they're not actually releasing an egg. Sometimes backing down on that exercise can be helpful, and doing more restorative things like weightlifting or yoga and those kinds of practices can be better. And we've talked about toxins. BPA is one that comes to mind. There's a lot of BPA data with causing toxicities that affect ovulation, but also even just affect baby in utero after someone becomes pregnant. Any other toxins that you guys think about that prevent ovulation? I know we talked about mercury a little bit already and some of the heavy metals.
BPA is a big one on my list.
Yeah. So don't get receipts. Don't touch the receipts.
Yeah. And I was reading something the other day too, all the other plastics that they're not called BPA, but they might be called like BPS or BPB. I'm making the last one up, but like, it's still a plastic. It's just given a different name. So you still need to watch out for, even though it might say BPA free, it may still not be the best choice.
Yeah. Yeah. So using like stainless steel bottles or glass bottles can be a better choice. Glass is hard. I'm afraid I'm going to shatter it in those. I've done it before, dropped those glass water bottles. And then nutrient depletions. I think we touched on this, but there are certain nutrients that if our body doesn't have the right nutrients, it's not going to be able to produce the hormones that we need it to produce to allow our cycles to have ovulation. So making sure we have plenty of magnesium. It was a common nutrient depletion. The zinc is a common nutrient depletion for men and women, especially when we think about patients with metabolic syndrome or on the PCOS insulin resistance spectrum, often can have low zinc levels. And then other nutrient depletions that you guys are thinking about, B vitamins, of course, with stress. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If the body knows that it doesn't have enough B vitamins for you, it's not going to have enough B vitamins to form, you know, all the neural processes that it needs to have to develop a baby. So addressing those kinds of things up front is really important. From the functional medicine perspective, when we have patients come to us like this, we're going to be looking at, okay, what's their insulin resistance look like? What does their stress look like? What is their toxic load? How do we improve that in the active process of becoming pregnant? And then the nutrient depletion piece and addressing the hormone imbalances. So hormone imbalances, if we have a cycle where we don't have enough progesterone in the second half of the cycle, and that could affect the implantation of an egg. So we could have ovulated, but we may not had enough time for that egg to become implanted to be able to have the viable pregnancy.
Yeah, I think definitely making sure you're addressing the estrogen piece. So we were talking about from like a nutrient deficiency or a mitochondrial issue, oxidative stress, and maybe we're not producing enough estrogen, because the way ovulation really works is that you have to have a certain concentration of estrogen for a certain amount of time. And that is what triggers that luteinizing hormone. Mm-hmm. And so without that trigger of the luteinizing hormone surge, then we're not going to get that ovulation or the release of the egg. So definitely addressing, making sure we're producing enough estrogen. And you already touched on kind of the reasons why. But then other things I think that can prevent the LH surge, and we kind of already touched on this, but it's like the inflammatory cytokines, the lipopolysaccharides, or like what's the toxins from bacterial infections. So making sure that we're addressing low-grade chronic infections as well, because that can also be one of the etiologies for preventing that surge and potentially not and having an anovulatory issue.
Right. Yes. So the gut dysbiosis, any kind of chronic infection, even if it's like a viral low-grade thing, can definitely impact the body's ability to produce these hormones in the correct balance. We talked a little about BPA being an environmental endocrine disruptor, but as far as other endocrine disruptors, so there's certainly the plastics, there's pesticides, there's things in our beauty products that are potentially disrupting and acting like estrogen in the body that can then can mimic estrogen and cause issues with hormone balance. And we've talked about this in the past on our detox focused podcast and discussion. So if you want to circle back to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, we've got a couple episodes, which I can link for you guys later about avoiding those environmental toxins.
I also just found a list. I was looking for this. There's a really good list of chemicals that have been found to inhibit steroidogenesis or the production of our hormones that we need. So like we already talked about, definitely BPA, but like PCBs, which are in agriculture and industrial chemicals, phthalates, which are a plasticizer, lead, mercury. So making sure we're not eating the big fish, any type of shark or tuna, staying with like the low oily fish, mackerel, herring, sardines, wild salmon, even like certain antifungal medications. So if you have a patient that's potentially taking a lot of antifungals for whatever reason, that can inhibit a certain enzyme that is imperative in the production of your progesterone. So making sure you're doing a deep dive into medications as well.
Yes, yes. Perfect. And then let's talk a little bit about thyroid and how the thyroid plays a role in ovulation and hormone balance.
I'm not a specialist in thyroid health. However, I will say that when we recommend you get a full thyroid panel with trying to get pregnant, is we want the full thyroid panel to include thyroid antibodies, because if you have thyroid antibodies, it could possibly mean that you are at risk for Hashimoto's, or you have Hashimoto's and don't realize it. But that, as an autoimmune condition, can impact your ability to get pregnant. And then also to like the way I look at hormones is up top, you have like your cortisol, like your umbrella. And then it kind of trickles down into all of our other hormones. You have like thyroid, and then it trickles down into like sex hormones. So if anything above is affected, so cortisol is affected by stress. And if your thyroid hormones are off, it's also going to affect your sex hormones or your hormones getting pregnant.
Sure, sure. Yes, and low levels of thyroid hormone can interfere with release of eggs, so it can contribute if you are ovulating. But even beyond that, when after you ovulate, hypothyroidism or low thyroid hormone can cause risk of miscarriage, but also can impact fetal development too. And so it's really important that if people do have hypothyroidism, that they're monitored very closely during pregnancy to keep their levels at a good place and make sure that no additional interventions are needed. But it's certainly something to rule out as a cause of infertility, like if your thyroid hormone is too low, that could be a potential cause. It may not be the only cause, because I find a lot of women that have hypothyroidism has a lot of this other stuff going on too. And so I think sometimes they go in and the doctor's like, oh, it's your thyroid and we'll treat the thyroid and we're going to fix it. And that might be the only issue, but a lot of times there's a lot of this other pieces going on and we have to address all of it to help them really get well and be able to thrive and prepare their body for pregnancies. And then we talked about the hormonal imbalances piece and the comprehensive labs. We've talked about insulin resistance and gut dysbiosis. So I think we covered most of what we wanted to cover. I know we were going to go into a little bit about some of the other supplement options and ways that we can boost fertility. We've talked about the whole foods and rainbow diet, eliminating the processed foods and refined sugars, even the diet sodas. The diet soda is like almost worse than the regular soda in a way, because I mean, maybe not if you have diabetes, but sort of if you have diabetes, because the chemicals in the diet sodas actually induce insulin resistance. So they're going to further worsen any of those PCOS type conditions that already have insulin resistance. And that's already a concern for ovulation. So definitely there's more information coming out about cancers and things related to those sodas. So if you are going to do something sweetened, like look for some of the natural products like stevia or monk fruit sweetened type drinks. I realize the Zevia soda isn't the most amazing tasting compared to all of the other things on the market, but it can definitely help you get past that urge if you need something. We talked about detoxing as far as clean water, making sure your water is filtered. I don't think we've mentioned that yet today, is important, making sure you're using a filtration system that actually does remove fluoride and does remove those heavy metals. Reverse osmosis is one of those. If you're just getting a regular countertop type filter, oftentimes those aren't enough to remove all of that. So like the Berkey filter removes, it has attachments that can remove fluoride, but there's some different ones that I think AquaGear one removes most things, but you have to watch out. The standard ones that you buy at the store typically are just making the water taste a little bit better. And they're removing some things, but they're not removing drugs and heavy metals and things that are also in our tap water, unfortunately. And then sometimes stress reduction things can be as easy as meditation, journaling, prayer, focusing on your quality sleep, and then the prenatal supplements. So this is where I think working with a practitioner is really important to like optimizing the prenatals for your body and what you need. So looking at the nutrient depletions and seeing what you need. We talked about inositol a little bit, but it does normally take about 4 grams of inositol, 2 to 4 grams a day, which is a lot. So it can be like scoops in a powder, it can be capsules, but it does take a pretty good amount to like have that sensitized effect. It's not super expensive. So it's not like it's, and they're not like huge fish oil capsules that taking 4 grams a day is hard to get down. But the water, when you mix it with water, it almost tastes a little bit sweet, which is interesting because it's helping reduce insulin resistance and it tastes sweet. And then as far as maca root, you guys want to talk about maca root?
Maca root is a natural substance that has been used for centuries, especially too for fertility. Mm-hmm. It can actually benefit both the male and the female, especially too if you think that your patient might have a little bit of, say, like the stress component going on. It can help naturally lower or balance cortisol, and then downstream it can improve ovulation. And then for men, it has been directly shown in studies to improve sperm quality.
Yes. Yes.
I would say the one thing though with maca root, it can increase androgen levels. Mm-hmm. So if this is kind of a mixed picture, and there may be a component of hyperandrogenism secondary to PCOS, I would be cautious to use clonopin root. But right, I agree, it does help increase some estrogen component there as well as androgen.
And it's good at like the help, basically it's part of its mechanism is it's like helping signal the brain, like in starting in the hypothalamus where we start these signal processes to make these hormones, because sometimes people just need that triggered to help have the cycle again and get their body back in that rhythm. So it takes maybe like 2 or 3 months of taking maca before they start to get regular cycles if they are completely not cycling. But it can be really good at that. For me, like Christine said, my whole base was broken out. I had all this acne and everything from the androgens, but at the times that I needed it, it helped to restart that cycle process. Another good one that we don't have on our list is Vitex, is sort of like the trade name, and Chase Tree is what it planted is from. But that one is also really good. And especially in people that might have some progesterone deficiency, it can help sort of in that second half of the cycle, help the body to produce more progesterone, and basically lowers that, increases the progesterone to estrogen ratio, and it helps even some people that have menstrual symptoms can help improve that. So it can be a good thing. Some women take it just during the second half of the cycle, but most of the time I find the whole cycle is fine for people as well.
I think another supplement that really is very broad and you can kind of use it regardless of like what your maybe issue is, if it's because with maca and chase tree, we want to know kind of like what your androgen levels are and what your progesterone and your estrogens are, but really supporting your mitochondrial health and your mitochondrial function, because, you know, that's the key, right? Like the oxidative stress piece and mitochondrial component is really where all of the hormones that we need are produced. And so in order to do that, we do what we already talked about, which is reduce our exposures to toxins, eat clean as possible, detox, support our elimination pathways, and then also, you know, eat like a full phytonutrient dense diet. But from a supplement perspective, finding a supplement that has like CoQ10 in it is optimal. Resveratrol, alpha-lipoic acid, NAC or N-acetylcysteine, those things have really been found to help optimize the functionality of our mitochondria. And that in turn helps to produce optimal sex hormones.
Yes. Yeah, great point. So anyone that's energy depleted or on this journey to health, those kinds of things can optimize the energy that we have. I always remember from like school, I feel like there's like a Magic School Bus episode or something is talking about like, or maybe just how I memorized it in a song in my head, like that the mitochondria was like the powerhouse of the cell, you know, like and singing it. Maybe I was in college when I made that up. I don't know. All right. Awesome. And then vitamin C is one that can also support adrenals. It's an antioxidant, certainly helps with immune function and things too, but vitamin C can be something that's easily incorporated into the day and definitely cheap to do so as well.
And it helps too, if you know you're low progesterone levels, it helps with those.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. All right. So, well, any questions that we have from anyone that's listening? I know we've had some comments from our team in the chat box about getting rid of those endocrine disruptors. And then we had a pharmacist that was on the team previously that was a good resource for cycle mapping and fertility tracking if people are wanting to learn how to do that and sit down and do that for family planning. But any questions? If you have questions, feel free to unmute yourself or put them in the chat box. No questions. Anything else you guys want to say to end it tonight about fertility?
I always like to say that if you have been told that you have unexplained infertility, or maybe you're already on your trying to conceive journey and seeing fertility specialists or reproductive endocrinologists, and you feel like you're not getting answers or you're stuck, it never hurts to get another set of eyes on it, you know, because functional medicine practitioners, we look at things so differently. Like we look at the root cause. We're not going to just try to say like fix your thyroid levels with a pill and then try to get you pregnant like with IVF. And because a lot of times that doesn't help because we're not getting to the bottom. So I always say, if you are not getting answers, find another set of eyes. It's, you know, not going to hurt anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And the challenge too, you know, with this is that there's some women that do all these great things and still have challenges, or some men and women in this process. And there's so many things from blood clotting disorders to lots of reasons why miscarriages can happen or infertility can happen. And so we're not saying that this is the end all be all and everyone's going to be able to use these tools, but there are a lot of women that can use these tools. And so that's really where we're wanting to share them, because there are so many people out there that this can help. I will say that my personal story is that I have crazy cycles, and I might've shared this before on a podcast, but crazy, just not very frequent. And so with my daughter, I actually took Chase Tree. I was just sort of reading online, not really knowing what all of this was at the time. I wasn't really well-versed in functional medicine until after she was born and we started digging into some things. So that did help me have better progesterone and ovulation, and was able to get pregnant with her after a vacation of stress reduction and all of those things that played in a role in that. But I had her and then breastfed her for 13 months. And then I did not have another cycle for like another 8 months after breastfeeding, which is not normal. People, ladies, whoever's listening, like, that's not normal. Most women should like start their cycles even while they're breastfeeding. Not everyone does, but so anyway, so 8 months later, I'm like, you know, this is probably a problem. I probably need to get this looked at. And so I went to a physician that checked my hormone levels, and she was like, your hormone levels are postmenopausal. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm here 32 and would like to be pregnant again, or not quite 32 at the time, but getting close to that. And so she looked at me and she said, the only thing that's getting this back is acupuncture. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, okay, well, I'll do acupuncture. I don't have any problems doing acupuncture. I had a little experience like in my early functional medicine journey with that. And then I went to the acupuncturist, and I also took Chase Tree again. And I don't know if I was introduced to maca at this time. I might have been also taking maca, but the combination of the three, I was cycling again within a month or two. And I also know plenty of other stories. I've had acupuncturists that have, this acupuncturist in particular has like pictures of the babies on his wall, like of all the women that he's like helped in this process. So I know we didn't talk about a lot of those physical manipulation things or some of the stress reduction modalities, but there's definitely a history with acupuncture and fertility. So definitely, you know, if that's something that you're like, sort of like, oh my goodness, I don't know how to get my hormone levels up, I've tried this and I've tried that, like definitely something to check out. It can't hurt. Other than like, you have to lay there with a few needles in your body for a little while.
It feels amazing.
It does feel amazing. It's like the weirdest thing too. Like, you're like, why does this feel good to have needles in my body? But yeah, it's just like that relaxation point. And some of it, you know, there's studies on acupuncture, and it's hard because they have like sham acupuncture where they don't put it in the right spots compared to like actual acupuncture, but you're both like relaxing in this room. So there's like that limitation between the things. So, but definitely, you know, if you go to an experienced person that knows what they're doing, I will say there's a lot of physicians that do acupuncture that did just like extra courses and things like that. And while some of them may be really good, I think finding someone that's like acupuncture is their specialty is the best place if you're looking for that. So anyway, so that's my little tip. Acupuncture is a tool on this journey too. And then Christine, anything else you want to leave us with before we close?
No, yeah. I think the take home points are to start your trying to conceive journey early. Yes. And optimize the functionality of yourself as well as your partner a few months before this journey, and focus on the root pillars of health from a functional medicine perspective. And if you need to do a deeper dive, always seek out a functional medicine practitioner, and we'll be happy to help.
Yes. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you guys. It was a great discussion. I think it's a great information for our podcast listeners too. So we'll definitely get that out on the web. So have a good evening.
Thanks for listening. We're excited you are on your journey with us. Find us online at farmtotable.life, farm with a P, and on Instagram at farmtotableteam.